Live from our KGGF studios here in Coffeyville, I'm Sam Speck. Glad you're with us. It is AM 690 KGGF on this Tuesday morning here at 740 as we go ahead and kick off our interviews with the Kansas Attorneys General over the phone, as it is the AG himself, Mr. Derek Schmidt, joining us over the phone. As Derek, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning, Sam. Good morning, everybody.
Yep, good morning. Glad to have you back with us here on a Tuesday, as I can't believe it. We are basically the majority through February. Man, these 2 months of 2019 have just flown by at this point. As really, I guess, just a quick kind of overview, how has the 2 months been for you?
You know, it's been good. In the Attorney General's office, we've just been kind of keeping our head down and doing our jobs. This time of the year, the legislature is sort of the dominant narrative in Topeka, and so we try to stay out of their way as much as we can. Been over testifying quite a bit. I was over talking about the AG's budget yesterday. We've got several pieces of legislation we're recommending, but things are going fine.
Great. Great to hear there, as I know you guys have got quite a bit on your table right now, and I think that's a good place to start, as it sounds like there is a handful, more than 3,500 Kansans right now, kind of on a demand of you guys and your office to make your efforts towards the ending of sexual exploitation towards human beings and your efforts on that, and I figured you could explain on that.
Well, sure. You know, we've talked many times over the years about our work in combating human trafficking in Kansas, particularly sex trafficking and other forms of exploitation. Child sexual exploitation has been a real priority for us in terms of the criminal justice response. And we still do all of that. And, in fact, we've stepped it up. But the reality is that on the commercial sexual exploitation side, the trafficking in persons, the buying and selling of human beings for either labor or sex services, the reality is that it's a marketplace, and it's the demand, the money, that incents people to do terrible things to other human beings. And so you can't have a complete conversation in this arena without talking about the demand side as well, and that's much, much harder. You know, that's countless individuals making countless individual choices that one by one may not seem all that harmful, but when you aggregate them, all of a sudden, there's a lot of money sloshing around, and that's what incents other truly bad actors to do terrible things. And so we've joined with a group out of Georgia called Street Grace. We're one of 11 states that have done that to launch the Demand and End campaign in Kansas. It's a public awareness campaign. It's designed to drive a public conversation about the connection between individual acts of buying sex or commercial sexual services, some of which seem nefarious on their face and some of which might seem innocent on their face, and the reality that it's the money that's spent by those many people that in turn creates the market that enables traffickers and pimps and others to exploit people in a terrible, terrible way. And so the first thing we've done to kick off this Demand and End campaign, which will be a sustained effort in Kansas, was we launched a petition drive. We invited people who care about this subject matter to put their name on a petition that is very simple. It simply says, I am one of the Kansans who demands an end to the commercial sexual exploitation of human beings. We got about 3,500 Kansans who chose to sign that, and just this past week we delivered that petition to the Kansas Senate, House of Representatives, and the governor. And there's actually a little-known process in Kansas. I learned about it in my days in the legislature, where certain petitions are filed in the permanent records of the legislature, and that's what will happen here. So for those 3,500 Kansans, they are permanently part of Kansas history, saying that they were among the first to stand up and say no more buying sexual services because of the consequences it causes.
Yeah, yeah, and as you were kind of explaining there, it's a catch-22, you know, because you could do as much as you can, I'm sure, with technology and trying to kind of cut off that middle ground or those meet points, but at the end of the day, it comes down to dollars and cents, and that's the driving point of a lot of businesses, and unfortunately for a lot of these dark-driven, you know, markets, as you had mentioned, and unfortunately, it's something that's going to be such a big mountain to climb to really, at one point, get to a complete end.
It's a sad reality. It's a hard conversation. It raises lots of issues that are difficult to grapple with. But at the end of the day, if we're not talking about the demand side, we're not going to ultimately make the difference we're trying to make. You can't solve this problem solely by chasing bad guys after the fact and trying to put them in prison. It doesn't work that way.
Certainly, yeah. And at this point, you know, as you had mentioned, it's just a step in the right direction to get everybody aware, get everybody on the same page, and then maybe, hey, maybe one day down the line that yeah, we do have the correct steps to go in and fully wipe this off of the map and have these crimes just completely go away, because they are, you know, morbid in many, many cases, and it's just they're evil acts of crime as something, again, incented by money most of the time. And unfortunately, money runs the world the majority of the time, and that's what makes it goes round right there. So that's a tough one to kind of tackle, but as your office is doing, as well as many Kansans around, trying to at least make the effort to get the word out there. So great to hear.
We appreciate everybody's engagement.
Yeah, exactly. Good to hear on that, as well as I know you guys have a task force for youth suicide prevention on that. I know that's a big thing going around here in the state of Kansas, and efforts in your office as well.
Yeah, that's true. We've been watching the data sets from a fairly obscure state group called the State Child Death Review Board. It's existed for 30, 40 years, and it's a group of very dedicated professionals who every year review what happened in every death of a child younger than 18 in the state of Kansas. They compile that data, and they, from time to time, make recommendations on things the state could do better to drive down the rate of child deaths. It's a noble calling, and they do a terrific job. One of the data sets that they've collected over the years is the rate and number of Kansas youth who die by suicide each year. And as we've looked at those numbers over the years, the trend line's been the wrong direction. It hasn't been a large number, hasn't been a dramatic increase, but it's been a slow, steady increase over the past decade. We crossed the rate of 3 per 100,000 population youth dying by suicide this past year. It's actually 2016, but that's the most recent data set available. And that's really a concerning trend. So about a year ago, we put together, along with the Tower Mental Health Foundation, an ad hoc task force, a bunch of volunteers who served for a year. They went around the state. They took testimony from dedicated individuals, everybody from medical and mental health practitioners to kids to dedicated citizen groups, and ultimately compiled a report that has some really, I think, very good recommendations, and mostly common sense, that they've just released. And we're going to be starting to use that to discuss with the legislature and other policymakers, you know, things we can do to try to bend that curve back down instead of allowing it to continue to grow.
Yeah, again, another, you know, unfortunate but very important conversation to have, especially with young individuals that come up in a world nowadays, you know, where everything's kind of plastered in their face. They can go online and sometimes get an image of what life could be. And, you know, there's many, many reasons as to why individuals would make those decisions now. But nowadays, it's just good to, again, have this conversation. I know it's tough to have out there as well. And I know you have been around. Is this something, I know slowly but surely it has been on the increase. But, Derek, I know you've been up there and kind of been around, you know, for a little bit of time now. So I'm sure you have seen these trends. Does it go back and forth, or right now has it kind of been on the steady incline?
You know, in Kansas, it's been a steady increase since 2005. That's when the data set begins, so I don't know what was happening before that. But in 2005, I want to say we were at about, it was either 6 or 7 in Kansas, and we crossed 20 in 2016. And that trend line is relatively flat. I mean, it's such a small data set. You know, some years you'd be up one, some years down one. But the trend line has been steady and up and in the wrong direction, and that's why we wanted to put together a group to take a look at it. You know, what often happens is there's a tragedy in a community, and the community rallies together because they knew the folks involved, and they try to come up with a response. But that happened, you know, 20 times in 20 communities around Kansas in 2016. There's no reason for every individual community, family, religious group, school, local mental health provider to reinvent the wheel when tragedy comes to their community. And so part of what we hope to accomplish is simply to connect the folks that have already confronted this and dealt with it in a community in Kansas with others who care about it but perhaps have not had to deal with it yet, so that when the unthinkable happens, the community's not starting at zero. They have a support base. They know where to go. They know who to talk to. They can see what's worked elsewhere. There are off-the-shelf ideas that can be pulled out and used. And then, of course, hopefully, that'll be true in many, many communities before there's a need in order to prevent.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing that you just hit on right there is, there's these 20 communities potentially all around Kansas that have to go through this tragedy, but why not cut those numbers down to 10, to 5, and then to eventually to none, all by this awareness and getting out in communication as well and reaching out to others, you know, in a world that seems like it's so difficult to reach out and meet new people and reach strangers. You know, there's good individuals out there, and it's good for them within communities to kind of come out and show themselves. And like you had mentioned, for support groups or for, you know, before that tragedy actually strikes, there needs to be some support as well. So, again, we're speaking with Kansas Attorneys General Derek Schmidt over the phone this morning. As Derek, I know those were a couple of big items that I wanted to speak about. Any things that you wanted to get out for our listeners? I know you guys have been speaking with the Supreme Court, potentially issuing some rulings right now on appeals in two cases, or if you wanted to speak upon that Walgreens thing that you had noted on off air a moment ago, Derek, I don't know. You can just go ahead and take away.
Well, yeah, you know, I hope here in about 40 minutes at 8:30, we're expecting word from the U.S. Supreme Court on whether it intends to hear either or both or neither of two cases from Kansas. One's a case we've been working on now for almost 2 years. These things take a lot of time, and we hope to have an answer today, and obviously we hope the answer is yes. The court will hear the case. It's an identity theft case out of Johnson County, and I'll spare you all the details, but suffice it to say, we think our state Supreme Court, got it wrong as a matter of federal constitutional law. That's a preemption question, and so we're waiting to see if the U.S. Supreme Court will agree to hear our appeal in that. The other case is a capital murder case out of northeast Kansas. That's when we think our court got it right. They affirmed the conviction and the sentence, but the defendant has appealed. So we're hoping from the state standpoint the court will hear one and not the other, but we'll know here in about 40 minutes, we believe. And then the other item that you mentioned, we're always in the process of enforcing our Medicaid fraud laws, both civil and criminal. We just entered into a settlement. We just announced it yesterday with Walgreens, a prominent, well-known national company. But they ultimately agreed to settle allegations we lodged against them of what's essentially civil Medicaid fraud. We'd accused them of on EpiPens and other insulin delivery devices, essentially padding orders, delivering more pens than doctors prescribed in many, many individual cases, and then changing their records to make it look like the doctors had prescribed more. Of course, the net effect of that was they sold a lot more product. It was a multi-state investigation. Kansas was involved. We've reached the settlement, and the bottom line is Kansas Treasury is going to get about $920,000 back from Walgreens because of their oversales from that behavior in Kansas. So we do a lot of those cases, but this is a recent one, and I think it's a good example of, you know, why the Medicaid fraud worked. We call it our taxpayer protection work.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, with something just short of $1 million coming and being granted back to the state of Kansas with that, as just kind of, it blows your mind that some companies at that large, as well as in a field where you would believe that a helping hand is so common, you know, in the medical field and with such things as prescription and medication that you have to get, is that's still, again, we were just mentioning this a moment ago, money incentive. That's unfortunately the majority of the time, and again, good thing that we've got kind of that backbone with it, as well as this, you know, I'm sure isn't the first time that you guys have had this with a nice backup there.
No, it's not. We do a lot of Medicaid fraud control work. It varies by year. Sometimes we recover $1 million. Sometimes we cover, you know, $10 million for the state. It just depends on how the cases unfold. But unfortunately, it's, shall we say, a target-rich environment.
Certainly, certainly. Well, again, speaking with Attorneys General here of the state of Kansas, Derek Schmidt over the phone with us. Derek, really appreciate you joining us here on a Tuesday. Any final notes for our listeners out there? We do got about a minute or two left here for us.
Well, I just hope everybody will stay warm and stay inside if it gets slick on us again. Looks like there might be some weather headed back. I don't know if it's going to cover all of the eastern part of the state or just the northeast, but folks are getting ready to bunker down up this way.
No doubt about it. Yeah, we do have a winter weather advisory for after about 4 or 5 this evening, so we'll see. We may get some snow down here in these parts, but Derek, again, you guys stay safe up there, and we'll just check in with you here a little bit later this we'll probably check in with you in March.
Sounds great. Thanks so much. Good to visit with you, Sam.
Hey, anytime. Again, that's Derek Schmidt joining us over the phones, Kansas Attorney General. As great topics on that. You can listen back to these interviews on our website at kggfradio.com underneath the community tab under the morning interviews.